भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नाष्टदृशान् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. This is Canto 5, Chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment, and today we're on text number 37. This is, as most of the verses in this chapter, it's actually prose. I'll just read that. Evam vitta vyatishanga vavriddha vairanu bandhopi purva vasanaya mitha udvahati atapavahati. And that means, translation, although people may be enemies, in order to fulfill their desires again and again, they sometimes get married. Unfortunately, these marriages do not last very long, and the people involved are separated again by divorce or other means. Please repeat. Yeah, sorry. Although people may be enemies, in order to fulfill their desires again and again, they sometimes get married. Unfortunately, these marriages do not last very long, and the people involved are separated again by divorce or other means. There's a short purport here by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As stated previously, every conditioned soul has the propensity to cheat, even in marriage. Everywhere in this material world, one conditioned soul is envious of another. For the time being, people may remain friends, but eventually they become enemies again and fight over money. Sometimes they marry and then separate by divorce or other means. On the whole, unity is never permanent. Due to the cheating propensity, both parties always remain envious. Even in Krishna consciousness, separation and enmity take place due to the prominence of material propensities. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Madeka Bandho Mat Sangin Mat Guru Man Mahadhana Man Nistaraka Mat Bhagya Mat Ananda Namostate. Here we're talking about motivated marriages. Sometimes here it's said, vitta vyati shanga. This is the words that Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or other commentators, they emphasize the meaning of this phrase. Vitta vyati shanga, association for the purpose of money. sometimes people get married for the purpose of money. We know here in America sometimes they have, well, in India, sometimes they have suspicious fires in the kitchen. Women burn themselves with kerosene just very soon after marriage. The reason is that they have actually been murdered. They burn themselves like that to make it look like an accident. Or someone else burns them like that to make it look like an accident. And that way they collect a dowry, which is generally given by some families still in India, and then they don't have any of the responsibility. It's a money-making venture. So much so that nowadays even there's elaborate arrangements made in advance for all sorts of dowry. The interest is primarily money. All this is a perversion of dharma. And in America, we're not free of the same tendency. We also have similar things. People get married, and then they get there's some suspicious death very soon after the marriage, and the husband or the wife, as the case may be, may collect the insurance money. So it's the same principle. In fact, once I read, there was an article, a very elaborate murder was hatched by one so-called husband. He married one woman, made her think that he was in love with her, and then for their honeymoon they went out sailing. And when they were sailing, this unscrupulous person pushed his wife off the boat and watched her drown and was circling her in the boat to make sure she was gone before he left. Can you imagine? I just really can't imagine. But this is all described here. Vedanubandha. Although they're envious, they form some cheating, honor amongst thieves, cheating arrangement so that they can cheat each other. So evam vittavyatishanga vivirta vairanubandhopi. Even though their relationship is founded in envy, or in the increase of envy, still they have this vyatishanga, this association, for the purpose of vitta, money. So purva vasanaya mita udvahati. People impelled by their previous vasanas. What does the word vasana mean? Does anyone know? Desire. It means a little, it's more subtle than desire. Vasana means your samskara, the trace of previous experience that's lying in everyone's heart. Sometimes it's therefore also called hrityaya, what lies in the heart. Rupa Goswami has explained in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that all of us who are conditioned souls, all of us who are not freed from bodily identification and therefore who cannot be free from the desire of sense gratification, we have lying in the heart so many desires that we may not even be aware of. We may not even be aware of them. But nonetheless, they impel us to act in certain ways. In due course of time, when the time is proper, then we act according to what's unseen. In the Karma Mimamsa system, they have this idea of adrishta, unseen fate. A person has to act. So much so that Arjun asks Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, what is it that impels a person to act even though he knows something is wrong? Who knows what Krishna's answer is? Kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna samudbhava. Coming about from the increase of the mode of passion, a person has to act either in anger or in lust. When lust is frustrated, then it becomes anger. But basically, it's the same thing. The origin is in rajoguna, this desire to enjoy independently of the personality of Godhead. Of course, the desire to enjoy isn't unnatural. It's part and parcel of the living entity. And therefore, those pseudo-spiritualists who would encourage us to extinguish all desires or to extinguish all duality, or extinguish our personality. What's the word for that in Sanskrit? Anybody know? To extinguish? To put yourself out? Nirvana. The Buddhists have this term, nirvana. Like a snuffed out lamp. This is what their goal is. But it's not really very practical, because the nature of the self, the nature of the spirit, soul, is to desire. And particularly to desire in love, loving relationship. And ultimately that can only be reposed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So until we realize that, We wander from one body to another, from one species to another, from one planetary system to another, from one universe to another, endlessly trying to enjoy these vairanubandhas, these envious relationships. And quite often they're based on vittavyatisanga, an association for the purpose of money. So nunam pramatta kuruteva karma yad indriya pritaya aprinoti. Rishabhadev teaches in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that person who is convinced that he is the body or that she is the body, he'll not hesitate or she'll not hesitate to do any sinful thing to obey the demands of the mind-body complex. This is the unfortunate situation of a conditioned soul. When one's stars are good, when one is under the, how should we say, the jurisdiction or the watch of a particular planet, that's called graha. Graha means when you're grabbed by a particular planet. Your karma is administered by nine planets, and sometimes those planets are considered to be malefic, they're harmful. Sometimes they're considered to be benefic, they're beneficial for you. But in either way, we're compelled to act. Those of us who are bound up by karma and attached to the modes of nature, we're impelled to act in good or bad ways. So, sad asad yoni janmasu, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we therefore take higher and lower births, again and again and again, chasing after our illusory desires. So, anyonya vitta vyati sangeneti etad vyachashte. He explains this, that they have a mutual arrangement of benefit for the purpose of money. Sometimes also we have green card marriages, although the government is cracking down on this. People get married just so that they can come to America, because everybody knows America means vitta, money. Rich country still, even though it's on the way down. So evam vitya vyati shangeti apavahati tyajati. Sridhar Swami says apavahati means he gives it up. There are two verbs used in this verse. One of them is udvahati and the other one is apavahati. So udvahati means to get married. Sometimes the word is used also vivaha, to get married or to join together. And apavahati means to give up. The Prabhupada here calls it divorce. Now, in the word for word, Srila Prabhupada says this little interesting. He says, udvahati actually means, he implies that it means not to get married personally, but to, quote, become united by means of the marriage of sons and daughters, end quote. It's an interesting twist. That sometimes we see, especially in India, not so much here because people don't even bother to get married half the time, but, and even in India now that's also increasing, but sometimes we see in India that people get married because they want the money of the other family. So they arrange to have their sons and daughters married in order to get dowry money or whatever money from the other family. So that's what Prabhupada seems to feel that this is implied here by the words udvahati, marriage, and then apavahati, to give up or to get a divorce. Either way, vairanubandhaha, the vaira means envy, and anubandha means that relationship. It's not pure. This is the important point to consider here. We don't say that marriage is bad. We don't say that men are bad. We don't say that women are bad. But the nature of all relationships in this material world, which is to say, the nature of all relationships that are essentially or primarily founded and based upon sense gratification, they're doomed to fail. They have to fail. Cannot possibly succeed. Prabhupada says again and again and again, throughout his purports, there is no possibility of happiness in this material world. We'll hear about that tomorrow. In his first beginning of his purport, he says that very thing. So, Shankaracharya also recognized this. He said, "Yavat vitto parishna saktaha." As long as you're capable of earning money, "Tavan nija parivaro raktaha." That long, your family members will be attached to you. Paschad, later on, jivati jarjara dehe, when you're living in an old, corrupt body that's falling apart and is good for no one's sense gratification, including your own, then Vartam kopina prichati gehe. Even in your own house, no one will bother to ask, how are you doing? No one cares. You've become irrelevant. And in the material world, before we become very proud of all of our accomplishments, we need to pause and reflect on the nature of this material, so-called material success. Material success means the degree to which you're able to provide sense gratification, either to yourself or to someone else. And in every conditioned soul, that benediction, that karmic opportunity, is going to erode. It will disintegrate. You will lose it. Therefore, you'll become irrelevant. At least at the time of old age and death, you'll become irrelevant, you'll become useless, nobody will care about you anymore. This is love. This is the nature of loving relationships in this material world. When the sense gratification is not supplied, people lose interest. Therefore, we say, we don't say, Srimad Bhagavatam says, previous acharyas say, that in this material world there really is no love. It's vairanubandha, a relationship based on mutual envy, and quite often for the purpose of making money only. Even so-called love, only for the purpose of making money. Those who have studied Indian history, they know that there are very few kings, either Muslim or Hindu, in Indian history, who did not ascend to the throne by killing their father or their elder brother. Most of them, actually, I can make that bold statement, most of them actually ascended to the throne by killing one of their family members. This is the degree to which the vairanubandha has been perfected in South Asia. So, Srila Prabhupada says here, every conditioned soul has the propensity to cheat, even in marriage. What to speak of monetary cheating? As a matter of fact, when I was the other day at my mother's house, she was watching television. There was a news report, and there was somebody was talking about, what do they call it? Monetary infidelity in marriage. What does this mean? That the husband or the wife is keeping secret funds from the other one. The other one doesn't know about it. So this, the report was that this is going to erode the nature of the purity of the marriage, going to erode the trust that a firm marriage is based on. So, yes, economic infidelity. Or even people have, that's because of greed, because of lobha for money, or because of kama, because of lust, people are also cheating in marriage. They have some other lover, that's called parakya. In this material world, it's an abomination. So everywhere in this material world, one conditioned soul is envious of another. For the time being, people may remain friends, but eventually they become enemies again and fight over money. So that means that actually we're already enemies. It's just that we agree to not be enemies for some time. If you can supply me with the sense gratification that I need, then I will not act in an envious way of you, even though I am envious of you. This is the nature of all things dharmic in this world. Although they elevate those who are very base, still, even dharma, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is the root of all cheating. Dharma itself is the root of all cheating. How is that? Because it's necessarily contaminated with sense gratification. Not Bhagavata dharma, of course, but ordinary dharma. Dharma in the sense of karma, pious karma. It's also contaminated with this conditional propensity to cheat or to be an illusion or to have imperfect senses, etc., etc. So, on the whole, Prabhupada says here, unity is never permanent. Due to the cheating propensity, both parties always remain envious. And sometimes we say there's no love in this material world, there's only envy. Even in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada concludes, separation and enmity take place due to the prominence of material propensities. This is a very important point. We shouldn't think that just because we're attempting Krishna consciousness to whatever degree of success we've had, that we're going to be free of these propensities. No, we also have them. On what basis do we have these material propensities? Those who are becoming Krishna conscious are trying to. What is it that affects us in this way also? Who can say? There are many, many right answers to the question. I'm just trying to generate some thought here. Karanam. What's the karana? Karanam guna sangoasya, Krishna says. The cause is always our association. If we are associating with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees, associating with Krishna's devotees doesn't mean that you find your friends who may be initiated into Krishna consciousness and sit down to watch the Super Bowl. That's not really satsanga. Association with devotees means you are machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantashchama nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Krishna says, the taking pleasure in discussing Krishna, in sharing realizations about Krishna, in endeavoring to serve Krishna and inspire others or be inspired by them for this ultimate purpose of life, bhakti. Svaipungsam puro dharma, the supreme dharma, uncontaminated dharma, nistraigunya dharma, we can say. We've already mentioned that ordinary dharma is contaminated, but this dharma is absolutely unsullied, absolutely pristine. That's there in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam as well. So, to the extent that we are not diving deep into the ocean of Bhakti Rasamrita-sindhu, then we can be infected also by these external features. Because you have to be associating with something. Association is a 24/7 process. We have our, how many holes are in the body? 9 gates. And each of them is being filled 24 hours a day with some external stimuli from the external world, from the material energy. It's like, I often give this example, here not so much, but in Dallas, where I used to live, the temple is located in a barrio, in a lower income area, and you hear them going during the nighttime. They're driving in their cars with big booming sound systems. Boom, 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 boom. This is called nishachara in the scriptures, night rovers. I don't know what they're doing, but it's probably not auspicious. So that sound also will infect your ears. It will go into your heart even when you're asleep. We don't really have a choice. Or when you're driving on the freeway, now they have these billboards are not enough. Now they have these lit up ones. They're very brilliant colors. Or even when you're trying to pump gas, there's someone attacking you there as well, trying to sell you something with some sort of, what do they call it, pump top TV. I saw one the other day. So this is the process of sangha. And this kind of sangha will have an effect on our consciousness. Therefore, the Sankhya program is to very carefully monitor the association that we keep or that we accept. Very carefully filter bad association out and allow good association in. The theory is called Sankhya. The application is called yoga, the lab, you might say. And the yogis are very vigilant in this way. They're very careful about what kind of association they accept. So this is the pivot, really, that is going to determine whether we're moving up or whether we're moving down in the human form of life. And even in Krishna consciousness, we can be elevated or degraded on the basis of the sangha that we keep. So these are a few things to think about. This verse has particularly mentioned money and the things people will do to get money, including taking a sacred vow just for the purpose of making money. This is a degradation of dharma. What do they call it? Kaitava dharma, cheating dharma in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We should steer clear of these things. And the only way that we can purify ordinary dharma of this tendency to become infected with material motivation is to keep Krishna focused, to keep Krishna in the center. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's put a lot of emphasis on Varnashram Dharma, and therefore Srila Prabhupada did likewise, but he called it Daivi Varnashram Dharma. because ordinary Varnashram Dharma can and will be contaminated by the influence of Kali Yuga. But to the extent that it is focused on Krishna and engaged in Krishna and aimed at Krishna, then it remains transcendental. So I'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments on any of this? Yes, Prabhu.
We often see in this material world, especially in the world of the motion pictures, that persons are married who have about five of the opulences that we know about. I'm saying that they don't have the last one, the renunciation, but they have the other five. And you would think that since they're beautiful, they're wealthy, they're strong, they're influential, famous, they have all the things that most people desire. In other words, they have everything, quote unquote, except Krishna, of course. But they have that. And why should they divorce then if they have fulfilled the material desires that just about almost everyone, except persons who are Krishna conscious, are desiring? Where is the need for such divorce? Usually it's not money, because they're both very, very wealthy. They're both very beautiful. So maybe you can explain or elaborate on that particular point.
Well, maybe I can't. There's a couple of things that come to mind here. Number one, I was thinking as you were speaking, that we perceive that people have all these various opulences. They have beauty, they have knowledge, they have fame, they have wealth, etc., power. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada, when he preaches, he emphasizes that actually they don't have these things. They really don't. Because the nature of maya is that when a person is infected by a particular mode of nature, his conception of life will change. Vayur gandhan evashayat. He will consider something which is actually inauspicious to be very auspicious, and vice versa. For a person in the mode of ignorance, if he smells the cooking of a sattvic person with ghee, he thinks it's very repulsive. He prefers unmentionable kinds of things, and his senses are very stimulated by that, and he considers that to be opulence. Srila Prabhupada illustrates this principle even further. He said, the hog who's satisfied eating stool in the gutter, he's not interested in eating halwa. He's got his particular conditional taste that's based in the mode of ignorance. So a person who is overwhelmed by the modes of ignorance and the modes of passion, that person will be attracted by these modes of material nature and the opulences as they're perceived and manifested within those modes of nature. But actual happiness in this material world is necessarily sattvic. So that's one thing. Then the other thing is that because such persons are generally in the mode of passion, especially in America, mostly we're passionate more than, passion and ignorance. But when a person is overwhelmed by the mode of passion we've already described, he won't hesitate to do anything. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Dushpurena analenacha," it's just like fire which can't be satisfied. The more you are cultivating passion in this mature world, and this is what persons in the bodily concept of life are impelled to do, the less you'll be satisfied, because satisfaction itself is the product of sattva-guna, not rajo-guna. So it's like trying to put out a fire by pouring gasoline on it. You just become more and more agitated, so much so that even if you have everything, as you were saying, that ordinarily people consider to be opulent, still, it's not satisfying. Santushti is necessarily a product of sattva-guna. Santushti means satisfaction. Those are two things that I can think of. If somebody else has anything to add, is that okay? Anyone else? Please.
I'd also like to say that, you know, there are different forms of wealth. You know, contentment can be a form of wealth. Also, peace. But also in this age, if you notice it, the mind is filled with so much trash. It's hard because our minds are filled with so much maybe hate, lust, anger, and different things. You know, that's why we constantly chant the Maha Mantra, that it really makes us ugly as beings. So as pretty as we are on the outside, we might look beautiful, we might have lots of shiny gold or nice cars around us, but really on the inside, we're very ugly. And so, you know, another angle of that would be that even though on the outside we look beautiful, wealthy, famous, and opulent, actually on the inside we're more demonic and we're filled with very negative thoughts. So therefore, you know, chanting the Maha Mantra and things like this will make us more beautiful, concentrating on Krishna.
Yeah, real beauty is within. To the extent that one is cultivating sattva-guna, as the Srimad Bhagavatam advises us all to do, to that degree, a person will begin to appreciate that virtue is the highest thing in this world, not money or, you know, external forms of sense gratification. A sattvic person will think like that. So he values that above other things. But what you said about the distinction between external opulence, we can say, and internal opulence, or beauty within, it reminds me of something Srila Prabhupada said. Once a disciple asked him a question and said that we see that in India, where there's so much dharma even still, especially 30, 40 years ago, it was still very dharmic, much more than now, than it is now. This disciple is asking Srila Prabhupada, do you see that in India people are very dharmic, but they're suffering so intensely, and they don't really have a whole lot of opulence, most people, compared to the Americans? And he said, on the other hand, the Americans are so sinful, and they're engaged in such pungent activities, yet they have everything at their disposal, everything is very easy for them and convenient, and they have all opulence. So how is that? And Prabhupada answered with two words. Does anyone know what he said? Just wait. And so Srila Prabhupada also mentions throughout his books that, you know, what does he say? This civilization is thriving on misdeeds only. Anyone seen this one? Prabhupada says. Another one is that he says, we're enjoying with borrowed plumes. We have our little trinkets of sense gratification. But these are borrowed plumes. When the karma runs out, then it's back to the real status. It is like these demons in Krishna Lila, for example, Putna. She came externally presented as a beautiful woman from Swarga. Everybody was just assuming this is some demigod coming to see Nanda's son. But once she was killed by Krishna, then her real form was manifest. So each of us, we may have this also. Externally, we like to be very clean, and we like to be very, we have our wealth and we have everything together. But inside of our hearts, there's so much blackness is there. So much is there. Now, only a person who's actually to some degree in sattva-guna, or only a person who has some degree of piety or faith, can even appreciate that. There are many, many people in this world who are so covered that they can't even accommodate the very idea that I might be ugly on the inside. These are unfortunate people. So this is the great fear of Maya. This is why we call Maya Mahadbhayam, great fear. Because once you get locked into that mentality, it's very, very hard to get out. It's like, well, Narottam Das Thakur calls Dvipada Pashu, two-legged animal. Yeah.
Just another idea came to my mind, and that is in regard to an answer to my own question, is that quite often persons become afflicted by or overwhelmed by the illusion that somehow if I go with another person who has another kind of beauty or another kind of wealth, different kind of car, a different kind of knowledge, that I will somehow be more benefited or more blessed than I am with this person. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the street illusion. So that seems to me, it's, Because that gives one a sense that one is expanding. I have another kind of beauty, another kind of wealth, another kind. I just had that. Okay, I've accomplished that. That's achieved. Now let me achieve something else. So this idea of trying to accumulate, so to speak, or acquire trophies, to put it another way, to give oneself this false prestige that I have something more and something better and greater, it seems to be another motivation that pushes us on to these foolish things. And as you mentioned, they never bring ultimate satisfaction because they're limited, they're finite, and they wear out.
They're illusions. They're illusions.
Illusion.
This is called Maya. Tamal Krishna Goswami used to put it very nicely. He said, in the material world, three things are possible. One, you never get what you want. Two, you get what you want and you find out that it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Or three, you get what you want and then you lose it. Either way, you suffer. This has to happen. Arjita Prabhu?
We're running late, but Amala Bhakti specifically asked in regards to the movie industry. And we know from experience that actors have very big egos. There was a joke, and you know, there's usually truth in the jokes, that an actor doesn't mind if God gets billing as long as it's not top billing. In other words, my name should come before God's. So when you put two such people together, they may have everything else, beauty, wealth, and all that, but they can't stand each other.
Yeah.
Because now they're competing to be number one.
Very good point.
You know, you dare to have your name, you know, come up more in conversation than mine? What are you, crazy? I'm always for, you know, like that. Of course they're going to clash. So it's not at all surprising that so many actors and actresses marry each other and then divorce shortly thereafter because they can't stand each other. They can't stand the personality clashes that are bound to happen when you have two such gigantic egos living under the same roof.
Very good point. Okay, I think we need to stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.